That's not what I want to say. We'll have a course, we'll have a course. Next week, the following week, October 8th, there will be a course, but I have to leave to go to the airport after that, and so October 15th, in fact, I'm going to be in Trieste. So you're welcome to come, but you needn't. I just have to talk there. So I'm sorry that this is no course meeting. And I'm not absolutely sure what we're going to do about making this up, but since there's absence of an in-class final or anything, we can see about what we do at the end of term. Maybe it's just one of those things. Okay? So I just want to make sure there's no October 15th, there's no class meeting. Okay? Today is September 24th, so there's another announcement today, which is the final thing I want to remind you of, which is in honor of the end of summer, and in honor of, I'm not exactly sure what, but the Fields, maybe just simply the generosity of the Fields Institute, there's a barbecue lunch for Fields Institute members and for students in our class. So I'm going to try to stop promptly at 12:30, despite your questions, and then we can go and mingle with the cooks and other people from the Fields Institute. So isn't that nice? So there's a barbecue. Good. This is the way I get to know you, at least those who hand out problem sets. I'm going to hand them back. Agayev Dmitri, I already know him. Bobby. Just pronounce your name once, please. Bobby. Long O. Shuang Liang. And can you pronounce your name for me? Can you pronounce your name?
Shuang.
Shuang. Yeah. And Liang is your first. Yeah. It's your last name or your first name?
My surname.
It's your surname. Yeah. Okay. Good. Kirill Mayorev. Thank you. Aydin Prager. Yes. Am I saying it wrong? Idan. Okay. Li Wang. Yeah. Thank you. Tyson Whitehead. Not made it today. Xiaojiang Yu. Very good. Okay. Today I want to talk about Laplace's equation. It's high time. So I'll have you know that I wrote. Thanks very much. I have you know that I was writing till late at night this lecture, and then when I finished it, I decided I don't like it so much anymore. So I changed it, and so it's one of these audience participation things that when we get to parts where I'm stuck, everyone can help out. So this is, I really want to talk about Laplace's equation, and following the theme of this section of the course, I want to do everything, or at least as much as I can, using the Fourier transform. So let's see, this is actually section 2.3, Laplace's equation. And I want to work on a domain. Well, I want to work on a domain where I can actually use directly the Fourier transform. So I'm going to do that on Rn plus. Well, that's the domain of all x and Rn. So it's an n-dimensional position vector. So x prime is a general vector in Rn minus 1. Sort of those are the horizontal components. And I want xn to be positive. And now, Actually, Laplace's equation is very often in demand to find potentials in very complicated, somewhat arbitrary domains. So we should think that later on when we generalize this, we want, so ultimately, so later on, general domains, omega, but there'll be n-dimensional open sets with smooth boundary, relatively smooth boundary in Rn. And then there's a question, I'm going to do things with using the Fourier transform, so I want something with where the Fourier transform works well without further complications. But there's one more setting, and I won't do that, but I just want to mention that it's possible. So the Fourier transform is also possible to use on, on the ball radius R in R2, and I guess the analog of that in n dimensions is probably, let me think about what I want to do for that, probably not the ball in Rn, but if n is even, so if we're in R2D, so if n is equal to 2D, we can work with the Fourier transform on the polydisk, where this is a one-dimensional ball, and so this is a two-dimensional ball, and so here the polydisk is two-dimensional balls and this goes d times, because each one has 2, so that's 2d dimensions. All I'm saying is I'm just doing the upper half plane, really. This could work in that setting. Okay? I haven't even said what the problem is. So the problem, and the most common problem, I'd say, is the Dirichlet problem. So that's something that looks as follows. I'm going to call that equation 1, is I want to solve Laplacian u equals 0. That is, I want to find the harmonic function in the region of interest, Rn plus, and I'm also going to demand, as we've seen as the norm, I'm going to ask for additional boundary conditions. I want, so u, x, I want to be equal to some data, f of x prime. Well, let me say the following. Run out of room. When x is equal to the first n minus 1 variables, x prime, and the last variable, 0, that is, this is in the boundary of the upper half space, which is r n minus 1. And of course, remember, x prime is in r n minus 1. Point. Sorry? Xn is another spatial variable. Sorry? I haven't drawn the picture, so that's a mistake. So here's the problem. Here's x prime. Here's xn. This is in Rn minus 1. This whole space is now Rn. That's the usual blackboard convention. All you can do is draw two dimensions, or at most three if you use perspective. But imagine many. And then here's our domain. I'm going to hash off our domain. Or just looking at domain up above. And it's not so strange to call xn prime, although xn time, although it doesn't play at all that role. But some people do use it nonetheless. We can make a nice analogy. So the function f is called the Dirichlet data. So f is the Dirichlet data. And it physically represents a charge distribution on the boundary of our region. And then u of x represents an electrostatic potential. Caused by that charge in the region Rn plus itself. Sometimes a useful thing to view. I haven't said one thing. What you have to say right now is this domain is non-compact. It's infinite. And in particular, you can go out in that direction, and haven't said anything about the solution. I'm going to say it now. Actually, we need solutions which attenuate as xn goes to plus infinity. So I've implied, and we will take from now on, we need that our solutions are going to have u x prime xn go to 0 as xn goes to plus infinity. And actually, we're also going to have the gradient and the gradient of u x prime xn goes to 0. And that we don't want, some sense in xn, there are two possible solutions for each data. You don't want, there's a two-parameter family of solutions for each data. You only want to pick the one which decays at infinity. So that's good. I'm just starting out by just saying, making a list of problems. So the second most prominent problem is, I guess, the Poisson problem. So that's equation 2, which is Laplacian u equals h. Laplacian u of x is equal to h of x for x in our domain, Rn plus. And then u of x, well, we again have our choice. It could depend on the physical problem we're studying, but most typically you'd say, I actually want u of x to vanish when x is in the boundary. That's a typical situation that one encounters. This changes volume as I turn my head down, so it doesn't do that so much. Okay? And now this h, of course, is going to represent a distribution of charges in the domain itself. So just think of h as being some distribution function for electric charges that are spread continuously through the region, and now you're looking for the electrostatic potential in a region which is not the vacuum, but actually has charges in the background. Okay? And then there's several others. What can I say? There's continuum many possible elliptic problems or problems for harmonic functions and their boundary data, but there's several other ones that come up relatively commonly. So several other common problems. So for instance, there's the Neumann problem. That's equation 3, which is I want to look for a harmonic function u for x in the domain satisfying the normal derivative of u equals 0 when x is in the boundary. And just let's note, here we're the normal derivative, I guess n for me generally points out of the domain. You could have the other convention if you wish. And since I've taken this very, very special domain, which is a half space, n is always the minus y direction vector, and so the normal derivative is equal to minus dx, sorry, not y, dxn, the xn derivative u of x. And this is, of course, evaluated at x is equal to x prime. You set that the nth component to be 0. What can I say? And then there's the last problem I want to mention. I mean, lists are rather boring, so I don't want to rattle on forever. I can even squeeze it in here. Is the Robin problem. Actually, Neumann was a German. Robin, am I supposed to say Robin? Actually, I never figured out which nationality he was. So let's say Robin. I sort of would say so too, except I had sudden doubts. The Robin problem. That's 4. And I think in the Russian literature, it's often called the boundary value problem. So the boundary value problem of the third kind. and probably Neumann is second, and probably Dirichlet is first, but anyway, that's many names for these things. And that's, you want to solve, you want to look for harmonic functions again in the domain of interest, and you want to satisfy the following boundary conditions. The normal derivative of u is related by a constant, or maybe a function, to the values of u itself on the boundary for x in the boundary. And we'll talk a little bit about all of those today. Anyone have any other boundary value problems that are their favorites that I should put up? You don't have to always study the normal direction. There could be oblique directions, and it gets to be problems if there are tangencies that vector field have applied to you. There's a whole big lore of this, but I think that's enough for right now. So, sorry? Beta is fixed. I made it a constant. Could be a function. Might change sign, starts causing problems. Yes?
So, all time boundary conditions are, they call a linear relation between the derivative and the boundary function.
Right.
Could you say you have a non-linear relationship or something more general?
You're an ambitious person. You certainly can, and they certainly come up, and please come back at 2 o'clock into this very room to hear more about nonlinear oblique boundary conditions. But this is a PDE course, so we'll start with linear case. In any case, in any situation, it's very often true that to understand the nonlinear problem, you understand well the linear problem. As Mark Katz says, be wise, linearize. So if we know a lot about that, it will help us when it's a bigger, fancier nonlinear problem. But first things first. Okay, well, the theme is solve everything we can using the Fourier transform. So let's go back to 1 and solve it, exhibit a solution using the Fourier transform. So let's take, that's why we took this domain to begin with. So we're going to take 1 in hand and describe F. Describe my data F. It's a function of X prime in terms of Fourier transform. So it's 1 upon root 2 pi to the n minus 1th power. It's slightly annoying these exponents, but that's the way it's going to go. E to the I c prime dot x prime. So c prime is my Fourier transform variable, so it's all also an Rn minus 1, because x prime is f hat of c prime d c prime. And so, just seeing that the x dependence of the right-hand side is entirely through a complex exponential, it behooves us to look at, so take the special case of f of x prime being equal simply to e to the I c prime dot x prime itself. And later on, we'll sum them in a Fourier integral with various weights, f hat of c prime. And so what I need is, I need to solve Laplacian u equals 0. So let me just not motivate this, but you just pull it out of your hat, that u of x, which is a function of x prime and xn, is equal to, I'm just going to pose something and we'll try it out, e to the I c prime dot x prime times e to the length of c xn. And now we can have a sum of coefficients, a plus length of c xn and a minus length of c xn, and I'm going to choose the minus. And the first thing we should do is at least check that the Laplacian of u equals 0. So let's take the Laplacian of u. First, it's the sum of partial x j squareds, j equals 1 to n minus 1, u, plus the x partial xn squared applied to u, which is e to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus c prime xn, which we, of course, calculated away, j equals 1 to n minus 1. When I take two xj derivatives of this, the only xj's are in the x prime, And the first one brings down an IXC, and the second one brings an IXCJ, the second one brings down another IXCJ, so I get a minus CJ squared, J equals 1 to N. And now I take two XN derivatives, I get a minus C, length of C times a minus length of C, so I get a plus length of C prime squared, all multiplied by U. And this is, and this cancels that, so we get 0. Pretty self-evident. How does it behave on the boundary? So let's just say that U of X prime 0 is, set this to 0, is precisely E to the I C prime dot X prime. So it's okay also. And there's one more thing I want to say is, how about E to the I C prime dot X prime that has boundary data? I'll call that V. E to the plus C prime XN. It also solves this calculation also works the same for it. Plus length of C squared is the length of C squared also, but this thing grows as XN goes to infinity. You would use this solution if I were looking in Rn minus. So this is the okay one, good in Rn minus. Not in Rn plus, at least for our purposes of solution, if we want to look at solutions which behave well at infinity. Okay, now just to superpose this, you know, you just take a superposition, and that is to say that I want to have my f of x prime, that superposition I've already started here, so here's the superposition of complex exponentials on the boundary. And so if I'm to superpose these solutions for all these weights of f, I'm going to find a u of x, which again is a u of x prime xn, is going to be 1 upon root 2 pi, slightly uncomfortable, n minus 1, integral e to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus length of c prime xn, f hat of C prime, sorry I got squeezed here in my blackboard use, D C prime. Makes perfect sense. And of course I want to manipulate this a little bit, so I am going to take some space here so I can do that. So I want to now write F hat in terms of its, I want to write F hat as the Fourier transform of F, so that's like saying I'm expressing U of X as 1 upon 2 pi to the n minus 1, because I'm going to get two factors for the Fourier transform and its inverse, double integral, e to the I c prime dot x prime minus y prime, e to the minus c prime xn, f of y dc, and then at least if xn is positive, this is a legal operation. I'm going to exchange the integrations. And so I can put dc here, and I'll make parentheses to make it look nice. And now we have u as an integral operator against f. I'm missing a few primes. This is a prime, and this is a prime. As an integral operator against f, and it's very interesting to evaluate that explicit Fourier integral. So I'd like to say this is an interesting thing. Well, let's look at its structure. It's a function of xn and a function of x prime minus y prime. Minus because we can use the Fourier transform and the domain transforms to the domain as we translate x prime in horizontal directions. So I'm going to rewrite this as the integral dy prime of a kernel, and the kernel depends on x prime minus y prime, and it depends on xn, again, integrated against f of y prime, dy prime, where the kernel, everything with this bracket underneath that, that's called d, o. And also slip in the normalization. And so it is extremely useful, so it has a name, and in fact it occurs so commonly it has two names. So, in particular, D of, say, x prime xn. Let's see, since it's a function of one variable in n minus 1, I'm just going to suppress the, I'm going to put y prime at 0, and I find any other y prime just to translate, right? So dx prime xn is equal, this is called the Poisson kernel for Rn plus, for that matter, or the double layer potential. And if you evaluate this Fourier integral, you find the following expression. Twice over omega n xn over x prime squared plus xn squared to the n upon 2. And of course, if I had x prime minus y prime, this would be x prime minus y prime, and that would occur here, not here or there, right? Xn is fixed. And it's an explicit expression because it's the upper half plane. And of course, what do you anticipate now? A problem set problem. So this is problem set 3. Is show this. Do this calculation. I didn't say what omega n is. So you will find, or omega n is the it's the volume, no, it's area, surface area of the unit sphere in Rn. So it's the unit sphere, so you might say the unit sphere is Sn minus 1 in Rn. And it's really just a normalizing factor. Well, it comes out from that. Okay, so let's suppose a theorem. And I've been counting, and I've come up to theorem 213 by now. I'm not. Why is it called the double layer potential? Because it stands for, it physically stands for the potential given by a dipole on the boundary. So it's a double layer of charges. Tradition. Now the Poisson kernel changes from domain to domain because it depends on the domain, but the double layer potential is always just that function. Which always confuses me because the Poisson kernel solves the Dirichlet problem and something other else solves the Poisson problem, not the Dirichlet kernel. It's actually the Green's function. So these 19th century guys are all mixed up. What can I say? We'll see a singular potential too, but that's coming. Okay? So theorem 213 is the solution of the Dirichlet problem. So 1, that means that I'm looking at Rn plus with data f. Well, I needed the Fourier transform to work, and I haven't done my work, I haven't done the homework on the Fourier transform, so I'm still hedging. But by repetition, you're getting comfortable with me Fourier transforming L2 functions. So next week I plan to actually do some analysis. Here I'm going to use some facts about the Fourier transform that are just suspended disbelief if you are a real skeptical mathematician until next week. So F and L2, of course that's L2 of Rn minus 1, is given by, well, it's a convolution operator. So u of x prime xn, that's a prime, xn, is equal to integral this x prime minus y prime xn f of y prime dy prime, integrate over the boundary, which is Rn minus 1, as I parameterized it. And what the thing I want to say about that is, so it's a convolution in x prime, and there's another variable xn floating around. That's because the data is on the boundary, but my variables are in a n-dimensional domain. And solution means I want it to solve the equation, and I also want it to take on the boundary data in a certain sense. So that sense, I'm going to make just slightly better statement, which is it solves with data in F, meaning that, in fact, view of x prime xn converges to f of x prime as L2Rn minus 1 functions. So it converges in the space L2Rn minus 1 as xn goes to 0. And actually, xn is positive because it stays in the domain and it goes to 0. So that's what I want to say. It's not a hard result, but I just want to be precise that it takes on its boundary values. The easy thing to prove, and that's what I'm going to prove, it takes on its boundary values in the L2 sense. There's zillions of ways things can converge, and that's a real analysis course. So it's not this course, but it could converge point-wise in L2 uniformly, in H1, in C infinity, in Schwarz class, in distribution sense. We're taking L2 sense right now, which is not strong, not weak. Not too strong, not too weak. Somebody had a question? Nope. Good. Well, we have to prove some things, so let's start. Which is, for xn greater than 0, let's represent u not by that, by its Fourier transform. So let's represent u of x prime xn equals 1 upon root 2 pi n minus 1 integral e to the I c prime, c prime dot x prime e to the minus c prime xn f hat c prime d c prime. And what I want to say is when xn is positive, this is a very nice convergence vector, which the point is c has to integrate to infinity, but here if xn is positive, this is an exponentially decaying term. So this converges absolutely. So this integral, which is complex and oscillatory, but when this is positive, it converges absolutely. And not only that, you can take as many derivatives as you want, in particular two, and pass them through the integral sign because it also converges absolutely. So also derivatives. X derivatives will bring X prime derivatives will bring down factors of C prime, which are nothing compared with a decaying exponential. And xn derivatives will bring down also factors of c prime, which again are negligible when compared with a decaying exponential. But let's take our leave to take derivatives. And I'll take dx prime squared of u of x prime xn. That's equal to, of course, 1 over root 2 pi n minus 1. Dx prime squared is really a vector operation. I'm sort of obscuring thing, which gives me I c prime quantity squared. That's also a vector operation. E to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus c prime xn, f hat c prime, d c prime. And dxn squared of u, same long expression, but the xn brings down two powers of minus c prime length. And if I take this plus this, so this plus this equals, this is the minus the length for the two i's, this is plus the length for the squared, you get zero. So at least it solves the equation. I've done that calculation twice now, so sorry. Let's do something else, which is let's do something else, which is I'd like to know how big U is. So U of x prime xn, and so that's equal to the absolute value of what's in this expression. I want to do the following thing. I'm going to put the absolute value inside the integral, so 1 upon root 2 pi to the n minus 1 integral, absolute value what's in the integral, e to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus c prime xn, f hat c prime, d c prime, that's certainly true. And then the absolute value, I'm always preserving xn greater than 0. The absolute value of this is, of course, 1, but this, no, that's decaying. So this is less than or equal to 1 upon root 2 pi to the n minus 1 integral. E to the minus c prime xn, that's a positive number, I just put it there, absolute value of f hat c prime d c prime, and I now want to use the Cauchy-Schwarz inequality. Does this Schwarz have a t or no t? I think this Schwarz doesn't have a t. Glad for the linguistic corrections. So it's less than or equal to one upon root 2 pi n minus 1, let me see, what do I want to do? 2 pi to the n minus 1, e to the minus 2, c prime xn, integral, d c prime, 1 half. So this is a vector dot this is a vector, and then so I want to take this integral of f hat c prime squared, d c prime, the 1 half. And this integral I can do, and it's equal to, because xn goes, because xn is positive, and it gives me a constant, sorry, I'm not minding the constants too much, over xn to the n upon 2. The n upon 2 is the 1 half here, times the L2 norm of f hat. And I also want to evoke something that I'm not proving but will prove next week, which is the Poincaré identity. So in some sense this is just foreshadowing, but many people also know it, which is to say that the L2 norm of the Fourier transform is the same as the L2 norm of the function itself. Or you could say that you could say something more, which is the Fourier transform on L2 is actually a unitary operator. So in our case, all I want to do is, so that says that f hat L2 is equal to, in fact, F L2, which allows me to just say that this is a constant over xn to the n upon 2, the L2 norm of F. And it gives us a rate of decay into the domain given L2 initial data. So what I want to do is worry about this expression as xn tends to 0. So what I want to do is, so what happens as xn, if those are positive numbers because you're in the upper half space, but I want to make this tend to 0. And I want to look at, say, the difference between u x prime xn minus f of x prime, and I want to know how big that goes. So let's do the following. I'll take its L2 norm. And that's the same as the L2 norm of its Fourier transform in the x prime variables using Poincaré identity. So the Fourier transform of f in the x prime variables is, of course, f hat of c prime. Now let's inspect what's the Fourier transform of u in the x prime variables. Well, we can read that off because if I just put parentheses here, we see that parameterized by xn, u as a function of x prime, is the Fourier transform of this. So that's what the Fourier transform of u in the x prime variables. So I'm putting everything in L2 on the right-hand side. And if just make sure it's way over there for me, so make sure I copy it down right. It's going to be e to the minus c prime xn f hat of c prime. And so it's important to me to study the convergence as xn goes to 0 to see how this behaves. So let's that's what I have to prove. And this is sort of what the theorem says. It solves the equation and takes on its boundary data. The integral converges, it solves the equation, it takes on its boundary data in this relatively straightforward sense. So the only thing I have to worry about is large C prime in that integral. So because f hat of C prime is in L2, for any delta greater than 0, there is a large, possibly very large, r greater than 0, such that the integral over c prime greater than r of f hat of c prime squared d c prime is small. So the procedure is, look what happens in the c prime ball of radius r, and then treat the rest as an arbitrarily small term. So given arbitrarily very small, yes, question. Oh, am I? I just had an idea which we should now market, which is if we had the boards of different color and chalk of different color, they could be transparent. And you could change your eyeglasses and see the different layers. Maybe it's not worth it. So let's do that. What I want to do is estimate e to the minus c prime xn minus 1. Well, that's what this is, e to the minus c prime xn minus 1 applied to f hat. It's and I'll square it so it's easier to write. It's equal to the integral of all the c's less than r of absolute value e to the minus c prime xn minus 1 f hat of c prime squared d c prime plus, of course, the c primes greater than, I'll put less than or equal to r, greater than r, that gets them all in, of the same thing, e to the minus c prime xn minus 1 f hat of c prime squared d c prime. And let's consider the second integral first. So so just note, how big can e to the minus c prime xn minus 1 be? I guess it can't be bigger than this is positive and not 1, and 1 at 0, but otherwise it's smaller than 1. And this is 1, so it can't be bigger than 1. That's nice. So the second term is integral of 1, bounded by integral of 1 times the absolute value of f squared dxc over all ball radius r, and I've claimed that's less than delta. So the second term is bounded by delta. Now let's look at the first term. So that's less than or equal to integral over c prime less than r, f hat c prime squared dc prime. And now what I'm going to do is take this and just take the maximum it can possibly be over that ball of radius r. So I'm going to say that so whatever is here is this stuff. I'm going to just put in whatever is bigger than that. So it's e to the minus the biggest I have a problem. Because of course my problem is for small xn. Of course, I did it backwards. So I told you it was an audience participation thing. This is what product of working late at night. But of course, this this has problems in going to one. No, I take it back. I'm okay. I'm sorry. I'm just hard to think on one feet. It's about time for the break, it seems. So I want to say, so what I have to do is, let me not do too much in my head. That's the problem. So let's displace this whole thing on the upper board. The delta is from the second term, and then I want to take what the maximum of that over c prime less than r, less than or equal to r, of the absolute value of that thing, e to the minus c prime xn minus 1. And so the problem can be for c too large, if I take xn to 0, if the size of c is 1 over the size of xn, I can't make that term go to 0. But if the size of c is bounded, the worst this can be is you put the smallest thing here. And you want this to go up to 1, so you put the smallest thing here. So that's e to the minus r xn minus 1. And this is, of course, times f hat L2 norm squared. This I needed a square. This needs a square. And I also always have to have that delta. And now, since r is fixed, taking xn to 0, we find the term I've represented here going to 0. So that says that as xn goes to 0, the difference between the data and the solution, measured in this sense, is no bigger than delta, but delta is arbitrary. So the solution has to converge to the data. So we're done. Sorry about that moment of confusion. Let's see. I want to finish by... finish this before the break by talking about the energy of a solution also always in terms of the Fourier transform. So, so this is often called the Dirichlet integral. So let's take a solution, a harmonic function u, and I want this to be in the region we're considering, which is, of course, today it's the upper half space, and I want to take its double integral over the gradient. So the double integral is going to be over r n minus 1, that's over dx prime, and then from 0 to plus infinity, that's dxn. And that's the Dirichlet integral, often called the energy. And I want to tell you a theorem about how to express the energy in terms of the boundary data. So that's theorem 214 in the way I'm counting things. It goes as follows. The energy of a solution is related to its boundary data always, this is explicit for our setting. So it's always on Rn plus by the following formula. The energy of u, and that formula there, which is an n-fold integral, is equal to also an n minus 1-fold integral, so this is integral over Rn minus 1, of xi prime to the 1 half f hat of xi prime squared d xi prime. And I'm going to rewrite that. So I'm going to rewrite that as the integral over r n minus 1. This, of course, I snuck it on to you that it's the r integral over r n minus 1 in the xi variables. But I also would like to express those in terms of the x variables. And I have this funny factor of 1 half. Let's see, the parentheses aren't right, so this makes the parentheses right. So I want to write it in the x variable, so this is rn minus 1 in the x prime variables. And I want to write it as following. The modulus of d to the 1 half, an operator acting on f of x prime squared dx prime. So, of course, that just gets me into trouble because now I have to explain what modulus and operator capital D is. So we mean by D, all I want to say is D is 1 upon I d by dx prime. Maybe it should be D primes. I'm getting tired of the prime, though, so I'll just leave it D. Okay? And let me justify that. So this is like saying, this is like saying it's the L2 norm of something. So it's the L2 norm of an operator, d to the 1, absolute value of d to the 1 half, f, L2 norm in x, squared, because I haven't taken a square root. There's an absolute value missing somewhere. This actually turns out to be real, so it's just parenthesis squared. F hat squared, xi, f hat squared, f squared, 2 powers. I'm missing something. So, but I'll happily put absolute values around things. Oh, no, I want d to absolute, on absolute value, then I want it. Is this what you want me to do? I'm happy to obey, and I'm happy to obey instructions if I understand them. I seem to not understand them. So I just want to say what the notation is. Well, if I just adopt this notation for a derivative, which only means every time I take a derivative, I also drag an I along, a factor of I along, then we have, of course, the formula that d by dx of f, 1 upon I hat, is just c times f hat of c. This was a proposition last week, but in fact, it wasn't, because the I was on the other side of my proposition, but that's good enough. Okay? And what I want to do is extend that notation to general symbols MC. So extend this to symbols M of C. Now, later on we'll make demands on what the symbols can behave, but I just want to think at the moment they're just functions of C. So I'm going to say that M of D, an operator acting on F, the result is a function of X. You do the following thing. You take F of Y, you take the Fourier transform, F of Y, I better put in primes to be consistent, F of Y prime, I take the Fourier transform, and I'm going to take the Fourier transform back, so I'll put in N minus 1 power, E to the I, C prime, X prime minus Y prime, and now, once I've done that y integral, I have a Fourier transform of something, and I multiply that by m of c, and then dc prime back. And these are called Fourier multipliers. So the Fourier multiplier operator. And they also are sometimes called, or this is a very special case of a pseudo-differential operator, because if it were a polynomial, it would be differential, but it could be another function, so it's sort of pseudo-differential. In any case, that's the kind of problem we're working on. And often, when you use this to define pseudo-differential operators, in order to do analysis, you make some demands on M, like it's smooth and it behaves in certain ways. Not just general M, not even just general C infinity M. But nonetheless, let's keep it at that stage for the moment. Okay? It takes a different weighted sum. F hat, yeah, it's like a weighted sum. It takes a new weight on F hat, then takes the inverse Fourier transform. If that weight were c, that's 1 upon I times the derivative. If the weight were minus c squared, modulus, that's Laplacian. But it needn't be a polynomial. In fact, I'm allowed to take a half power, as I just did. Which reminds me, we probably want a break, and I want to prove this theorem for you. So I'm going to prove it, and we'll have a break. It'll take me just a little time. So here's the proof, which is u of x prime xn has this expression. E to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus c prime xn, f hat x c prime, d c prime. And therefore, the gradient, so let's take gradients, take first derivatives. So I have dx prime of u of course, the dx primes only see the x prime, so I get an I, oh sorry, I get an I c prime, e to the I c prime dot x prime, e to the minus c prime xn, f hat x c prime, d x c prime. xn, this is a vector quantity, so in fact this is a vector quantity, there is the vector, dxn of u, 1 upon root 2 pi n minus 1, e to the I c prime dot x prime. Now an xn brings down a minus c prime times e to the minus c prime xn, f hat, etc. Sorry? I'm going to take those and put them in the energy and do an integral. And I'm going to prove that this energy, which is defined up there, can be written like this, which is in notation that. Okay? The energy of a solution is related to its boundary data, always in the setting Rn plus, by this formula. So the energy on the left is what I defined above. It's the integral over an n-dimensional integral of the gradient squared, and the thing on the right is the boundary integral. And it has to be a solution or else that's not true. But if it's a harmonic function, then it is true. Well, think if you're doing numerics, would you rather do n-dimensional integrals or n minus one-dimensional integrals? Clearly, every gain in dimension you have is the big the dimension is the big parameter. Okay, so let's make the Dirichlet integral. So now the Dirichlet integral it's going to be integral from, I have to integrate over all n space, so I'm going to integrate xn last, then all over r n minus 1 of the grad u x squared dx prime dxn. And I'll do that as follows, the xn integral last of integral over r n minus 1. Well, I have this squared, which is by the Poincaré identity in the xn in x prime integral the same as this squared in the c prime integral. So I'm going to put in here absolute value of I c prime e to the minus c prime xn squared f hat c prime squared d c prime, and at the end dxn. I'll put a parenthesis, and there's a big gap. That parenthesis is matched by that parenthesis. And now I have to sum, so I sum the squares of the first derivatives, and that means I examine, that's the Fourier transform of this, so I can use the Poincaré formula to just square up that, that's there. But then I can do the same thing here, I take the square of this, I'm doing the x prime derivative, so I just take that square of that and put it in here, so it's also equal to c prime squared, well, c prime e to the minus c prime xn, f hat. Squared, another integral, another parenthesis. There, I think that's right. Poincaré, the L2 norm is equal to L2 norm of the Fourier transform. And now, just observe it. This is a c squared, and this is a c squared, and this is e to the minus twice c prime xn. So let's just simplify this. I still have not done the xn integral. Here's the r n minus 1 integral. It's a c squared, that comes from here, plus here, e to the minus, oh, 2, there's 1 here, that's 2, e to the minus c prime xn, and e to the minus 2 c prime xn, because this squared, and after all that, f hat of c prime squared d c prime dx N. Good. Please tell me, where is xn? Only in one place. It's right here. So I'm going to take this integral, this, and this, and do it explicitly. So the energy of u, which is this left-hand thing, is equal to the integral from 0 to plus infinity, e to the minus 2 c prime xn dxn. That's the fixed thing. It depends on c prime. Then afterwards, I take rn minus 1, I take twice c prime squared, that's a prime, f hat c squared d c prime. Agree with me? I'm just shuffling things left and right, and the big trick was to use Poincaré. What do you think this integral is? It's a 1 half c prime. So I get rid of this by getting rid of the 2 and that extra power. And now let's just look. What do I have left? I better rewrite it. An integral over r n minus 1, 1 power of c prime, 2 powers of f hat of c prime, d c prime, which is what I claimed it to be. I had the misfortune of writing it, covering my blackboard. So everybody look. Ready? There it is. Let's stop for a break. We're a little overdue. I'll move it up and again. Everyone agree? Take half on each power, and then it looks a little better. I'll leave it in the middle. That's not satisfying. Let's return. I have about 20 pages of notes to talk about today, and I've talked about 5. Such is life. We'll come back with the maximum principle. Let's have a glass of water. whoops, relax for a second more while I erase the blackboard. While I'm doing this, Lars Johnson pointed out something where I made an error of calculation. We did this calculation which said that there's a constant over xn. This solution decayed as you went up in xn. And this factor is n minus 1 over 2. Sorry. It's you integrate an exponential. And so let's carry on. I want to talk about the maximum principle now. But of course, remember that we had the Poisson kernel. Which is, let's see, I want to solve. So I'm going to prove the maximum principle for the Dirichlet problem. I mean, there's various versions, many, many versions of the maximum principle. I'm giving the most straightforward one here. Remember the Poisson kernel. We had this d of x prime minus y prime xn, and it had some expression factors, 2 over this normalizing spherical area, xn over x prime minus y prime squared, oops, absolute squared, it's a vector, plus xn squared, to the n upon 2, and it's pretty clear that that's positive. And 0 on the boundary, so it's non-negative, but only if xn is equal to 0 does it become 0. Right? So we're back in the situation where it becomes a triviality. It's like we did for the heat equation. The maximum principle is a triviality. So let's take data, f of x prime greater than or equal to 0, then, oh, and I want my data to be L2 data because I'm discussing things which I can do, or otherwise some kind of interoperability condition. I'm discussing things I can do using the Fourier transform and the fact you integrate against Poisson kernel. And so I have u of x prime xn is equal to, well, the convolution, d of x prime minus y prime xn, f of y prime dy prime, and this is over r n minus 1. And clearly, if this is non-negative and this is positive, this thing is greater than a 0, and it's only, it could be equal to 0, and only equal to 0 if it's identically equal to 0. How do I say this gently? If it were ever 0, then it has to be identically 0, right? If this were ever 0, this is positive, this is non-negative. The only way to make it 0 anywhere is to make this entirely 0. So if f is absolutely identically 0, and if f is absolutely 0, then u is absolutely 0. U is identically 0. So it's a strong maximum principle. It's the same principle, it's the same thing we had before. Same statement we had before, it's like for the heat equation. So that's, now I worked myself into a corner because I wanted to say that's a theorem. but now it's bad. So I'm, for neatness purpose, I'm going to rewrite it. So theorem 2.15, which is, suppose that f of x prime is greater than or equal to 0. And how do I say that? And I also want to suppose that it's an L2 of Rn minus 1. Then for all xn greater than 0, u of x prime xn is greater than 0. Unless, of course, f is the 0 function whereupon u is the 0 solution. Don't sneer at 0. I mean, my favorite harmonic function is 0. If you're in a situation where you have to test something's true, try 0 first, and then go on to more sophisticated things. Okay? As in the heat equation, you can use it to derive a lower bound for positive solutions. So I had an upper bound before, now I'm going to have a lower bound. So this gives us a corollary. 2.16, automatically, which says, again, suppose f is greater than or equal to 0, and that, remember this A, we had an A which is a subset of those x primes such that f of x prime is greater than delta. A bounded set. And now if delta, I mean, could be empty, but if f is non-zero, well, I don't want to say this. If f were not zero, at least it were not zero in a positive measure set, then there's some delta such that A has positive measure. So A is a bounded set with measure A greater than zero. I mean, if I make delta 100, maybe A is empty, but if I made delta very small, some A has to start being positive measure. Let's take that A. And the statement is then, and I've worked myself into a corner, so then, I'm sorry about the displacement from here to here, then I have a lower bound on x. X prime xn is bigger than 2 upon omega n xn over distance from x prime to a squared plus xn squared. N upon 2. Well, times delta the measure of A. Proof, it's the same as for the heat equation. No, take an A which is bounded.
Yeah, I mean, if you have
A needn't be bounded. No. Take an A, which is a tiny little thin point going out to infinity. It could stay in L2. But I don't want to take any, I don't want to take A equals that set. I want to take a bounded subset of it. Just so I don't get trivialities. Just so when I move away, it allows me some freedom. I snuck that by you on the heat equation. And now I can tell you're getting more sophisticated because you questioned me on it. Okay, the proof. Oh, we should vote on the proof. Do you want me to just say it's the same as the heat equation? Do you want me to say problem set problem? Probably not. You want me to do it? Okay, I'll do it. U of x prime, xn, it's equal to this integral d of x prime minus y prime xn, f of y prime, dy prime. But of course, you're allowed to drop stuff and you get a smaller number. So you get a smaller quantity. So I'm going to integrate only over a, d of x prime minus y prime xn, f of y prime, dy prime. And of course, this is bounded below by the nth over y prime in A of d x prime minus y prime xn f of y prime dy prime. And now if I did that right, I'm going to get the least of this is the max of this. So that's not right. Damn. There's something wrong here. Come back to this. Please think about it for me. I'm going to finish my thought, finish this line. Inf over this, so of course it's going to be the inf over y prime in A of d of x prime minus y prime xn. And integral over A of fy is dominated above by f is delta there and the measure of A. So these factors are right. Now I just have to worry about this factor. So let's see. If I make this a smaller number, if I make this bigger, so I have to make this, this is not the distance of x prime to A because that's the smallest set. So I have to take the, this is wrong. I'm sorry. This is not the distance. It's the max. I didn't say it was close, so I better take the soup of the distance, the soup of the length from x prime to y prime squared, y prime in A. That's what I have to do. I have to get to the smaller number. And so now my theorem is wrong. Oh, that's the statement of my theorem. Fortunate. There we are. That's the proper thing. Well, x prime needn't be in A. So it's not the diameter. If you take the soup of two points in A, then it's being the diameter. But x prime could be on the moon. So I don't want you to take the closest point in A. We need the farthest point in A. How do I say that? Well, I guess I say it like that way. Closest point in A is the distance. The farthest point is what I wanted. Okay. Maximum principle also gives uniqueness theorem. So maximum principle also gives... maximum principle also makes it very makes uniqueness, at least among the class where you represent things using the Poisson kernel, a very easy fact. So uniqueness, and just to be on the principle, suppose you have two solutions, u1 of x, u2 of x. Well, then the difference v of x is equal to u1 of x minus u2 of x is also, so two harmonic functions, two solutions of Laplace's equation, Laplacian equals zero. So this is, so the difference is also harmonic. Let's suppose if u1, so if the boundary data for u1, which is f1, equals the boundary data for f2, and because I'm always working, I guess I'm stuck myself to working in L2, I'm going to take them both equal to L2, then the boundary data for v is equal to 0. Then v x prime 0 has supposed to have given zero boundary data. But that implies, just by the strong piece of the maximum principle, that v is identically zero. That's all. So u1 has to equal u2. It starts being funny how I feel funny saying it in length because it's quite a triviality now. Let's go on to more phenomenology. And what I want to talk about is attenuation. Whoops. In concert halls, you're supposed to... One physical principle associated with Laplace's equation is that, related to the attenuation of oscillatory solutions. So there's a reason why humpback whales sing in very low tones. It's because that oscillates lower than high tones, which attenuate very rapidly in trying to produce sound waves in an incompressible fluid. So I want to talk about that, and just in the context, I don't want to bring any whales into exhibit, so in the context of solving Laplace's equation with the boundary data. Okay? So this is so what I want to say is what our attention is, so where our concern is decay in Xn drawing to infinity of oscillatory solutions. And so I'm just going to state a theorem. And just to show you that we're making progress, this is theorem 218 already. So I'm going to suppose that F I'm just sort of stuck with the setting of L2, but okay. Let's take L2 initial data, and F is the Dirichlet data for our problem 1. And I want F to be oscillatory. So oscillatory you can phrase in terms of its Fourier transform. So a solution which has some components which vary very slowly has support for the small Fourier transform variable. So to make it oscillatory, I'm going to say that F doesn't have support near zero. So I'm going to say distance from the support of F hat to zero, and I'm going to make that distance greater than rho. And then the theorem says, then how big does U get? How small does U get as Xn grows? And I want to say it's less than a constant C e to the minus rho Xn. That's what I want my statement to be. Well, I needn't just talk about whales. I can talk about imaging, electromagnetic imaging of the body. That is, people who study the Dirichlet-Neumann operator to understand the conductivity and therefore can image living things. And the idea is you apply a voltage and you measure a current. And the question is, if you want to image the center of your body, should you apply a very oscillatory voltage? And the answer is, you can't penetrate very well. You need low frequencies to get inside. And that's this phenomena. And the exponential decay is a real and important factor. Okay, so let's see where we are. So let's just prove this. So a proof. And in the proof, we'll see whether I really do mean distance to the support, or do I have to adjust the statement. Maybe you should make sure you write in pencil, at least given today's lecture. So let's see. Since so we have the distance of the support of F hat of C prime to zero is greater than rho, and I made it strict, so there exists a delta, positive delta, such that inf over C prime in support is not just greater than rho, but also greater than rho times 1 plus a tiny little bit. And I'm going to make a constant which depends on delta. So maybe it's not the most sophisticated estimate, but it is at least quick. and it shows the, and it exhibits the principle. Sorry? The inf of Xi over this set. There we go. Is that a little bit better? I just want to say if the distance greater than rho, so the distance is really greater than rho plus delta for some tiny little delta, and my constant will depend on delta. Okay? So then I want to express u. So u of x is, it gets a little tedious now, I've done this so much, 2 pi n minus 1 integral e to the I c prime dot x prime e to the minus c prime xn f hat c prime d c prime, but I don't have to iterate where f is 0, so I don't have to iterate everywhere. I can stop when I only have to do it over the support of f hat. And so therefore, I can bound u of x by, well, this factor. Integral over the support of f hat. I'm just taking absolute values everywhere inside. It gets rid of the complex exponential, but it leaves me e to the minus c prime xn f hat c prime d c prime, and I guess I better put absolute values. And I want to now just do something simple but telling. So I'm going to split this up in the following way: root 2 pi n minus 1, always integrating over the support of f hat. I want to take this factor, e to the minus c prime xn 1 over 1 plus delta. And I want to, so this is multiplied because I ran out of room on the blackboard, times e to the minus c prime xn. And then I have minus delta over 1 plus delta. There we are, because this plus that equals 1. I'm left with the f hat c prime d c prime. And now we just bound this by e to the minus inf over c prime in the support of hat of f hat of this factor, c prime xn 1 plus delta. That's that term. Times an integral. Put all the rest in that integral. 2 pi n minus 1, integral over the support f hat, e to the minus delta over 1 plus delta, c prime xn, f hat x c prime, d c prime. Of course, now this is bounded by rho. So e to the minus rho xn. That's how it was designed. Right? Divide by this, get a bigger number than rho, so I'm allowed to put in a smaller number in the e to the minus exponential. Now I have to find something which bounds this. Well, in lieu of doing anything particularly dramatic and expensive, how about if I simply use Cauchy-Schwarz? And it'll give me a constant which depends on delta. So one part of Cauchy-Schwarz is the integral e to the minus twice delta over 1 plus delta c prime xn d c prime 1/2. And I'm running out of room. And so this times is going to be down here, times the other part of the Cauchy Schwarz, which is F hat C prime squared D C prime, 1/2. And this, of course, it's always over the support of F hat, but I could might as well integrate over everywhere. So I have a factor E in front, E to the minus rho xn. I don't even have to put the absolute values on xn because I'm taking xn to plus infinity. It's the upper half plane. This, of course, gives me the L2 norm of F hat, which is the L2 norm of F. And now I have to do this integral, and that gives me a delta dependent constant plus an extra factor I see, which I seem to have screwed up on, and that extra factor is x n to the n minus 1 over 2. I'm just doing this integral in my head, it's bad because it makes me have to rewrite the theorem, which is, I think, my third time today. It's really not so great. But let me go back and rewrite the theorem. All I did was forget here. This is going to be a delta-independent constant, and this decaying factor has extra terms, xn to the n minus 1 over 2. I did it in the wrong place. Anyway, that's the name of the... Whatever's on the right-hand side here should definitely be what this is. Okay? And since I don't have that in my notes, I better quickly put it in. Okay, let's. Now we have 15 minutes to do the rest of the half of the class. But, maybe we should vote on that. I think in the remaining part of this 2-hour stint, I can present the Poisson problem, the solution to the Poisson problem, the fundamental solution to the Poisson problem, the Green's function, and then talk about the Neumann problem and single-layer potentials. That's a little bit much for 15 minutes, but I could probably do most of that. And then I will unfortunately not be able to do something which I like doing, but it's a little bit different, which is I wanted to take derivatives of these quantities. In particular, I want to take derivatives of the Green's function with respect to the domain. That's a beautiful calculation due to Adamard, which we can do here just in the context of perturbing a half space. I have to leave that out if I talk for 12 minutes. So my tension is I want to make progress and also want to give you interesting things. So I want to call a vote because, of course, you're the constituency. Should we finish up some minimal amount of Laplace's equation in the half space today and then move on next time? Or should I just do some things today and we'll come back and do half time next time, continuation of Laplace's equation? I tried not to prejudice either of those choices with the tone of voice. So option one is finish with this version of Laplace's equation today. Option two is take an extra hour. Anyone prefer option one? Anyone prefer option two? Anyone not prefer anything? Okay. Option two, I think, has it, although people are a little timid about raising their hands. I will talk a little bit more, and then there's a picnic. So I want to now talk about the Poisson problem, which was my equation 2 today, but it's been an hour and a half since then, so I better write it down again. I have x is equal to x prime xn in the upper half space, and I want to solve Laplacian u is equal to h when x is in that domain, and I want to satisfy u of x prime 0 is equal to 0, so x in x prime and r n minus 1. So this is the boundary on the boundary of the upper half space. So let's proceed naively. Allows me to give you another problem set problem, actually. How many do you have today? One, I think. A little bit dry, a little bit short. Two, okay, a little bit better. Okay, so let's proceed naively, and I'd say all I want to do is take u hat in x, but hat I now want to be n-dimensional Fourier transform. So it's 1 upon root 2 pi n integral, e to the I x dot xi. There are no primes. All that effort with primes now pays off. I have a different notation for all of xn. I have my hat in the wrong place. I want to write u in terms of u hat of xi dxi. And if I take Laplacian of u, and I want that to be equal to 0, I have 1 upon root 2 pi to the n. Laplacian of this, if that converges, is going to be minus xi squared u hat xi dxi e to the I x dot xi. So if I want this to be equal to, if I want this to be equal to h of x, where, of course, h of x is equal to 1 upon root 2 pi, again, to the n, integral e to the I c dot x, h hat of c dx, then it better be that minus c squared u hat c equals h hat of c. And so therefore, this dictates that we have u of x equal to the following formula, 1 upon root 2 pi to the n, integral e to the I c dot x, h hat of c over minus c squared dx. And I want to write that in terms of the Fourier transform forward of h. So I have now 2 pi to the n, e to the I c dot x minus y, 1 upon minus c squared dx. Close the parentheses. H of y dy. If I could perform all those operations of interchanging integrals, passing derivatives through, then that's what the solution should be. And it's a very, very interesting to understand what is this kernel. This is now going to be gamma of x minus y, the fundamental solution. So that leads me to pose a homework problem. So problem set 3. And I guess this is problem 3 of this one, which is do that integral, or try to do that integral. Take the 2 pi n inside, 2. So then it's just the integral of gamma against that object. Oh, the integral of h against that object is going to be my solution. And what are the issues? Well, one is it's very singular at 0. And the second issue is I've paid no attention whatsoever to the boundary data. All I just said is I want to solve the Laplace's equation, and I came up with something. So I'm going to come up with a gamma, but it won't have anything to do with the boundary data. But it will be a fundamental solution. So problem set three is, do that integral discuss its singularity? Do the integral discuss the singularity? Okay. In doing that, let's see, then I had something I wanted to say at this, right at this point. I might as well say something about what I want to come out. So what I want to come out is that our expression for U U of X is going to be an integral against H of Y dy. Oh, here's what I want to say. It's going to be the integral of a function of a function X minus Y H of Y dy. So the answer, I guess I'm giving you a problem, but I'm giving you also the answer. So the problem, of course, that's a mathematician's problem. You have to show why that's the answer and discuss the singularity. So where gamma of X minus Y, now it depends on dimension. Let's make the dimension N equals 2. Then it's going to be 1 upon 2 pi log of the distance from X to Y. Remember, distance from X to Y is X1 minus Y1 squared plus X2 minus Y2 squared 1 half. But in higher dimensions, N greater than or equal to 3, gamma is going to be equal to 1 upon, let's see, it's 2 minus N, so that's a negative number, omega N, where omega N is the same thing as before, is surface area, I mean, N minus 1 dimensional surface area of S N minus 1 times what's called the Newton potential, X minus Y to the N minus 2. And it definitely has a singularity at the origin. Okay? And then I have to say, let's see, the following is that we had a horrible singularity and we paid no attention to the boundary data. So I want to introduce for the first, but definitely not the last time, the method of images, which we can do in, since our domain is the upper half space. So this is the method of images. So I want to do the following thing. You're saying what the method of images is. Absolutely. Thanks very much. Thanks very much. I need the guidance like that today, to tell you the truth. The method of images is the following thing. That I have a point here, x prime x n, at which I want to solve a harmonic function. Oh, sorry, if I want to solve for Laplacian is equal to h. So I want to solve Laplacian u at that point x is equal to h at that point x. But I have no idea, but that's my domain up here, and I have no idea what h is down there. So one option is we'll just set h to 0 because it's irrelevant. But that's not the correct option. I should rather follow the other option, which is if I make a fictitious charge in the piece of the domain which has nothing to do with my problem, designed so that the potential cancels on this boundary, then I can also satisfy the boundary conditions. So now what I want to say is define down here h of x prime xn. Of course, xn here is negative. I want you to define minus h of x prime minus xn. Minus xn is positive. So I'm going to call the point x star equal, so if x is equal to x prime xn, I'm going to call x star is equal to x prime minus xn. It's reflection through the xn equals 0 axis, coordinate hyperplane, hyperspace. And then I'm going to solve my problem u of x everywhere If you permit me, you're the ones that have to do this exploration, but if you permit me, I'm going to solve by doing the following. Integrate over all of Rn, gamma of x minus y, h of y, dy, and I'm going to write that in two ways. I'm going to write it in over Rn plus integral over Rn minus gamma of x minus y, h of y, dy. And then I'm just going to say, well, h in Rn minus is really h of minus h of y star. So I'll make this minus h of y star, which I can rewrite as the integral over Rn plus of gamma of x minus y, you leave a gap, h of y dy, and just a little bit of fooling around says that the star could go here instead of there. So I'll say it's minus gamma of x minus y star. Stop. And now it's an integral of a function over the upper half plane against your data defined in the upper half plane. This, moving the star around, is just a change of variables. And this has a name for the upper half plane. This is called the Green's function. X and Y, the Green's function. Or Green's function, I guess I should say. Green's function. And has the property that, well... depends where x and y are. Often a layer potential has a one coordinate on the boundary, which I do not have. It has the property that if y is taken in the boundary, then y is equal to y star, and these cancel. And because it's symmetric somehow in x and y, when x is taken in the boundary and y is general, then they also cancel. So because of our decision by popular acclaim, I'm going to talk more about Laplace's equation for an hour next week. And anyway, the picnic is starting now. In fact, we're a minute late. So I'll accept questions, but not very many before we go out and have something to eat. We can ask Quinius questions out there.